This is Emmitt Smith. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome to Faith on the Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission. I'm Rob Motti with my beautiful wife, Remy. Great to be with you again in L.A., Las Vegas, Orlando, Charlotte, Atlanta, Philly, or if you're listening to us on our podcast, wherever you are, thank you for tuning in. Our guest this week is Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver Tim Brown, who played 16 of his 17 seasons for the Raiders. I really enjoyed my conversation with Tim, so stay tuned for that. And one of the topics that we discuss in that interview that I wanted to touch on today is during his playing career, Tim was so well respected by his peers, by his teammates, that early on he had said, "I like to play gospel music in the weight room." So it got to the point where he would walk into the weight room at the Raiders facility and guys would just switch the music from whatever they're listening to some gospel music. And I was thinking about that and I thought, how cool is it that he commanded that respect? And of course, he was a great player,
right?
But also a terrific leader. And he was able to be who he was. And sometimes we get in a situation where we change or compromise maybe some of our principles. And it's not a big deal if you're listening to any other music. Like, we'll listen to certain music certain times or however it may be. So that's not the point. But the point is sometimes we change who we are to fit into a certain group. Like, you can be one way around church friends and we can be a different way around fellow colleagues at work, and then a different way around other friends that are maybe from high school or from our past or from college. And really, when we become Christians, when we're all in, got to try and be that same person in front of everybody. We can't really try and change who we are to fit in, because we're not going to fit in. The truth is, we're not.
We're not going to fit in, but at the same time, I think, like, when, like, I mean, that's pretty awesome. Like, he walked in the room and they changed the room back, they changed the music back to, like, whatever fits him. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty awesome. That's when you know you walk your talk.
Yeah.
And that you know that people see how you live and act and respect that and actually, like, want to be like that. So, I mean, I don't know. Would people change the music if I walk in a room? I'm not sure. Maybe. I think they would know I'm uncomfortable. I'm very uncomfortable.
I think if it was explicit lyrics, like,
I think they would know I'm uncomfortable. I don't know if they would change the music. Maybe they would. I don't know. I've never been in that position.
I've had people sometimes apologize for using foul language around me.
Yeah, me too.
And that, you know, that's cool, although sometimes
I struggle with that.
Although sometimes I'm a potty mouth myself, although I'm really good at that. But sometimes I will get angry and upset, and I'm like, wow. So
when you have kids, I mean, it's not an excuse.
I know, it's not an excuse, but I'm talking to myself here, like, okay, if I can be this way to the point where somebody will apologize for using foul language, and then I let something slip at home in front of the family, what am I? I got to do better. I have to be better, and I constantly want to do better, and I constantly want to be better. I was reminded by the Bible verse, Galatians 1:10. Am I trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I was still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. I love that Bible verse because when we're in those situations when we're trying to fit in or be with a group of people that maybe we were friendly with at some point, but things have changed, or we're at different stages in our life, we're a different chapter, those are challenging.
You know, I'm going to flip it the other way, and I think I'm guilty of that. I think this has happened when I would be listening to worship music or talking about something, and I'm the one that sometimes want to accommodate other people.
Oh,
so
you'll take the worship
of that because I don't want to make people uncomfortable. And call me like Jesus freak or something. And I'm guilty of that. And I don't know why that just hit me right now, where I feel like
I'm speaking to you.
Yeah, like, no, it's true, because I've done that, where I'm like, I don't want to be like that annoying person that's like, you must listen to only worship music.
Right.
And, you know what I mean? And
especially because you have different tastes and you like different music,
but
too.
I really only listen to worship music. It's kind of weird. Like, my ear cannot listen to anything.
For
it's
a while, it's
so
been
weird.
That way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but occasionally I'll put on something and, like, just, like, we'll have a dance. We'll have a dance fest with the kids. And,
oh,
like,
yeah,
you
kids
know,
music, yeah.
But it's kids. It's like kids bop or whatever kind of music.
It.
That kind of thing. But this is where it's challenging sometimes. We'll be sitting home trying to watch a movie together with the family,
the
with the girls.
Nowadays.
And it's such a challenge unless we're on, like, Up TV or certain. It's hard to find any kind of family movie, even like Disney. There's issues. There's different kinds of things that I think, like, Disney to me is not fit for kids.
No.
It's really not. Mm-hmm. And there are, you're watching, we'll watch movies and we'll turn them on, and then there's like, all right, there's sexual content, there's nudity,
there's
cursing, there's
a lot of stuff
whatever there is,
there.
And we're like, we can't. These are some of them are just like supposed to be Netflix sitcoms or something like
that.
It's so hard
scared to let them watch something by themselves. Like, that's kind of sad that I'm afraid that they will watch an episode and there was something there that I don't want them to be exposed to.
Very inappropriate stuff.
Yeah, just not just that too. It's just like this weird like. We should be okay with sin kind of deal. And it's just like not okay. Don't push that on me.
The world
me.
Is trying
like,
to push
it's so
being,
annoying.
Yeah, being
just
okay.
Like, okay with everything. Yeah. Like everything. I'm not okay with everything. And I will
and
continue
where,
to not be okay with everything. So don't push that on me and my kids.
And that's where we can't be embarrassed. We can't be ashamed.
Yeah.
And we can't, as it says in Galatians 1:10, try to win the approval of human beings or try to please people. Because if we try to please people all the time, we most certainly will not please God. If I'm trying to live for the affection of mankind, I'm not going to please God. Because when you are a Christ follower, when we are following the ways of Jesus Christ, we are going to be different. And we have to be okay with being different, and we have to be okay with being looked upon as someone who maybe doesn't fit in all the time. And there's going to be criticism that comes with it. There's going to be people looking at you sideways, and then there's going to be people looking at you waiting to call you out for hypocritical behavior.
Well, they do anyway, so might as well just, you know, be a Jesus. But I'm telling you, everything nowadays is being judged. So might as well be judged for the good stuff. So I used to do that, the whole like accommodating people. Right now I do not accommodate much. I just do my own thing, and if you're cool with it, that's fine. If you're not, I'm also fine with that.
And it's not a better than you attitude either.
No. I'm just
that's
like,
the thing.
Not okay with just pleasing everybody. That whole mentality is awful anyways. And you end up not pleasing anybody, including yourself. So what's the point? Like, nobody's really trying to be pleased anyways. They're just trying to find fault with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well just please God and be happy in the process, because that's what you wanted. That's you want to please God, and you want to be okay with that.
And you know what happens? It ends up your close circle, your inner circle, becomes smaller.
Oh, is there even a circle anymore?
And that, but that it's
I don't even know if there's is there a circle?
It's okay to have a smaller circle sometimes, and it's okay to not be as popular as you once were, or as outgoing and fitting into everyone else's lifestyle. Because your lifestyle has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You have changed. You are in Christ, and you're trying to live a different way. And sometimes that's all. It's always going to be challenging. And,
right.
And I mentioned like hypocritical behavior. We are always guilty of making mistakes. We're always guilty of not living up to it. But people are always looking. They're always looking to try and call you on that, or try and say, oh, so-and-so lives this way, but they did this or they did that. And we got to be mindful of that. Like, we got to be mindful of who we're representing, and we got to be mindful of how we live in Christ and how we show that to people. And I don't know that Tim had to do too much outside of who he was to gain that respect.
No.
I don't think he had to do so much of he was a leader, but he wasn't the in-your-face kind of outwardly talking about the gospel, like a Reggie White back in that time period, mm-hmm. but he was able to command that respect and show people, this is who I am, to the point where they wanted to put gospel music when he walked in. So up next, you'll hear from Hall of Fame wide receiver Tim Brown. You're listening to Faith on a Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Today, over 40 million people are being forced into trafficking and slavery. One in four are children. We cannot allow them to suffer in silence. We need you. We need everybody. Go to ijm.org/take action. Get information. Understand how you can be involved. Because of the work that you are committing to do, they will be free.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Karen University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Karen is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Karen is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at karen.edu/visit.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc. is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have two daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
With 33 convenient locations, Heritage's Dairy Stores desires to be your deli of choice. Heritage's full-service delis offer great-tasting products for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Hairy Egg Breakfast Sandwich, made with two farm-fresh eggs, cheese, choice meat on a fresh Kaiser roll, makes mornings simple. Heritage's famous subs are built on freshly baked Lissio rolls and feature Dietz and Watson premium meats and cheeses, freshly sliced anytime. Making lunches at home? Try one of our lunchbox specials, which are sure to please. Heritage's Dairy Stores, our family, your hometown deli.
This is Trevor Story, Colorado Rockies. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission. I'm Rob Mahdi with Remy. If you're listening to us for the first time, you can go to faithonafieldshow.com, find every episode since we launched in 2017. We've had an awesome lineup of guests, and you can listen anytime at your convenience on any of the podcast platforms. You'll hear the full interviews on there. Be sure to follow us also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Faith on the Field, and tell a friend about the show. I want to take a minute to thank our awesome sponsors. Please check them out on our website, International Justice Mission, Karen University, Heritage's Dairy Stores, Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates. If you would like to be a sponsor for our show and help our ministry grow, please reach out to us at team@faithonafieldshow.com. We have various packages. We can cater specific to your needs. Our goal is to be on a sports radio station in every state, and you can help us get there. If you don't have a business to advertise on, but want to help the ministry, we have a donate button on our page on faithonafieldshow.com. And you can also help out by purchasing some of our merchandise through Remy's 828 Threads Apparel store. We have t-shirts and so much more. Really cool stuff. Check it out. You can find it on our site, faithonafieldshow.com, under merch. Our guest this week is Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver Tim Brown. Tim played 17 seasons in the NFL, 16 with the Raiders, his final one with the Buccaneers. He was a 9-time Pro Bowl player, caught 1,094 passes for 14,934 yards and had 100 receiving touchdowns. He was also an excellent returner. Tim is a strong man of faith. We sat down this week. Here is my conversation with Tim Brown on Faith on a Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission.
Tim, only four wide receivers have ever won the Heisman Trophy, and you were one of them, of course. You had the most successful career. You're in a Pro Football Hall of Fame. So, man, when you look back on that transition from Notre Dame to the Raiders, what was the biggest challenge for you?
Oh, man, literally learning how to play the position, man. You know, my last year at Notre Dame, I was in the wishbone offense, you know, because I was starting quarterback Terry Andrzejczyk, broke his collarbone second game of my senior year. And the backup guy was Tony Rice, who had set out the year before because of Prop 48. So, you know, the only offense he knew was a wishbone offense. So literally in a week's time, we went from a drop back offense to a wishbone. So when I got to the league, you know, I was grateful to have guys like James Lofton, Willie Gault, Mervin Fernandez to literally teach me how to play that position. And if not for those guys, it would have been, you know, a much slower start for me, without a doubt.
It took a few years for you to develop into being that number one guy, that number one receiver, and you end up going to 9 Pro Bowls. You play in a Super Bowl. You had almost 1,100 catches, 15,000 yards. Tim, when you look back on all of your accomplishments, however, what stands out to you? What are you most proud of?
Well, you know, in 89, man, I tore my knee up and the doctors told me, you know, maybe 4 years I had, you know, after that, you know, and so I wasn't expecting to play past 27, 28. And, wow. You know, when I got 30, I think I had one of my best years, you know, stat wise in the league. But I think the consistency, man, of being able to persevere through, you know, the injury and all the little knickknack things that goes along with that over the years. And to be able to literally play, you know, I played 15 years and I like to say I didn't miss a game, but they did hold me out of one game that I could have played in, but they wouldn't let me play. But to have that kind of record, man, where week in, week out, you know, when you're the go-to guy, you're taking all the bumps and bruises of playing in the NFL, but you're able to play 15 consecutive years without missing a game for the most part, I think is something that I'm very proud of.
You played with 20, 21 different QBs, a bunch of different coordinators, I think like 6 head coaches. So to me, that speaks volume about like your ability, despite, because we talk so much about continuity and chemistry. Just how important is that, Tim? Because you kind of defied that, the wide receiver, quarterback chemistry, the coordinator being in that same system. How tough was that and how important is it to really have that?
Well, it's very important to have it, without a doubt, you know, and even though I was able to have an incredible career, you know, we didn't win. We didn't win games, right? We didn't win enough games to win championships and things of that nature. And so from that standpoint, it bothers me a lot because, you know, you play a team sport to win team awards and not just for the individual awards. But yeah, it was something, you know, look, I realized this, that you may be a bad quarterback in NFL, but every quarterback in NFL can throw a ball 5, 10, 15 yards straight down the middle of the field. You may not be able to throw the outs or the go routes and all that kind of stuff, but everybody can look straight. And so in every offense that I was in that came in through the Raiders, every quarterback, I always told them, I'm your guy over the middle of the field. So when you need to check it down, look for me. And that just sort of worked out for me very well. But I tell you what, man, I would literally give up a couple hundred catches for more wins in the championship, without a doubt. But things worked out the way they did. And, you know, sitting where I'm sitting now, I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, you did get to play in that one Super Bowl, and there was a little bit of success back-to-back years, 3 years in a row going to the playoffs. What stands out to you the most about that Super Bowl season and getting there and eventually, obviously, losing to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very unique year, right? Gruden had just left the year before. We were a very good football team, obviously losing the in the Tuck game. You know, and he, you know, a couple of weeks after that, he was gone, right? But we knew we were a very veteran football team. And if we could just come back and do what we had done before the last couple of years, and, you know, in 2000, we had made it to the AFC Championship game. And Gannon gets hurt, first quarter, and that kills that chance. So, look, I mean, we were in a good position, we felt. And Callahan was smart enough at that time to at least say, hey, look, you guys go do what you do. With me, Jerry Rice and Gannon and, Charlie Garner and Tyrone Wheatley, all these veteran guys, I mean, that offense was too potent, man. You couldn't be in the right position. If we didn't perform, then we would fail. But if we perform, it was going to be pretty tough for a defense to stop us because we knew exactly where everybody was going to be at the appropriate time. So, yeah, you know, I think, you know, having that veteran football team really just helped us out at that particular point. So,
well, the Raiders haven't won a playoff game, Tim, since that year, since going to the Super. They've only been in the playoffs once since in that entire span when you guys went to the Super Bowl. How can this team, I don't know how closely you follow them, but how can they get back to, forget about greatness and winning Super Bowls, but simply being a winning team and getting into playoffs?
Yeah, you know, it's a very difficult thing, man. You know, I learned this when Gruden came to the Raiders. We didn't know how to win football games. I mean, as a collective unit, you know, I mean, guys had, you know, won at other places or, you know, been to the playoffs in other places, but we didn't know how to win. And he was putting us in position to win, but we would fail. And I think that's the same thing that he's going through right now. You know, these guys have to learn as a team, not individuals, as a team, how to win these football games. And until they do that, once they do it, they're going to be a juggernaut, without a doubt. But until they do it, it's going to, you know, it's going to be the way, you know, it's been the last couple of years. You win 5 or 6 games early in the year. Everybody's excited because you're on a great pace to make the playoffs. And boom, you know, everybody gets in everybody's head and nobody can go out and perform. And finally, you find yourself, you know, looking on the outside, looking in at the playoffs again. So, but it's just going to take some veteran guys, man, to really gel together and make this thing happen for them.
You talked about telling quarterbacks that you're their guy over the middle. It's a different game nowadays. And right. How much easier do you think it is for receivers to go over the middle or put up these big numbers because defensive backs just can't play as physical as they were able to back in your day and years before that?
Well, look, man, I can't even imagine a football game where my life wasn't threatened, you know, going over the middle, you know. So, look, it was so bad. I used to make deals with guys. Like, look, man, you don't take my head. You know I'm coming over the middle. You know that's what I do. I'm coming over the middle. You don't take my head off and I won't cut block you, all right? Let's just make that deal. So some guys went for it, other guys didn't. But, look, I mean, hey, you know, I had one – higher up guy in NFL who is coaching now to say, man, you would put up probably about 2,000 yards a year if you were, I mean, with the inability for them to chuck you at the line of scrimmage and then they can't headhunt and do all that stuff down the field. I mean, there would be absolutely no fear of going over the middle of the field. And, you know, I didn't have much fear back then. So certainly now it would just be easy pickings, I believe. But, hey, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, say, you know, I'm better than these guys and they're that. But, you know, our game was just totally different and preciseness and things of that nature. And I think if you put that in today's football, I think it would be pretty successful.
I mentioned earlier how only 4 receivers have won the Heisman. One of those guys was just this past season, Devontae Smith. How good do you think Devontae can be in the NFL?
Wow. I mean, he's coming into the league at the right time, man. I mean, this is a wide open offensive league at this particular point. You know, there are 3 receivers on the field 90% of the time or 70% of the time, they tell me. And, you know, you have 4 receivers on the field quite a bit also. So, you know, when you have that kind of room, and you know you only have one guy who's looking at you, and all I have to do is beat this guy, and I can be off to the races. I mean, this kid could be really dangerous, no doubt about it. I think if Philly can find a way to get him in that open field and let him do what he does, it's going to be very interesting to see how great he can really be. Because, you know, everybody's worried about his size. Can he take the bruising? Well, there's not much pounding going on in the NFL like it used to be. So I don't think that's going to be a problem for him unless they have him return punts and kicks and that kind of stuff, which, quite frankly, I think he should. But I don't think they will because they may look at him as a bit too valuable. But I think this is a kid that can really light the league up at this particular point, man. And I'm very interested to see how he does.
Tim, one of the things I appreciated most about you is being a man of faith is the fact that you would be in the weight room and they're playing gospel music. Just tell me a little bit about that.
You know, look, man, I think if you live right and people understand that you're really trying to do something that is special, they respect you for that. And, you know, I think I had one conversation back in 96 with the group about, hey, you know, let's play gospel music when we're in here on Mondays and Thursdays or whatever. And, you know, you had a little pushback initially, but, you know, after that, people just said, hey, you know, it does sort of feel good to hear some clean music. And, you know, so from 96 until I left there in 03, if I was in the weight room, everybody automatically put it on gospel, and that's how we rolled, man. And I just saw that as a sign of respect. And you know, but at the same time, I knew that they were watching me, right? And mm-hmm. and I couldn't fail them, you know, by being immoral in some crazy kind of way, you know. But not that I was perfect, but at the same time, you know, I definitely tried to lead these men in a way that maybe they hadn't seen in the NFL from a guy who was so top level. You know, we had Reggie White back in the day, you know, to lead us, to let us know that it was possible. And for the Raiders, I was just trying to be that guy.
In your memoir, you wrote that Lou Holtz was for you what Apostle Paul was for Timothy. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I think that's such a great analogy.
Well, I mean, you know, you have to understand that I went to the University of Notre Dame for one reason, and that was to get an education. I mean, football was only the means of doing that. And so my mindset was always on education, 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 and never on, you know, how can I be better at football? So from that standpoint, when he got there, he started telling me things like, you could be the best player in the country. You know, he told the media that I was the most intelligent athlete that he had ever coached. I told everybody, don't get too excited. He was at, you know, Minnesota and Arkansas, so that's not too much of a compliment. But, you know, and all these things he started to say, you know, finally. And the one thing that really got me to listen to him was that he said, hey, I hear that your whole goal is to make sure you graduate and get this education. And he said, look, you're going to do that, but you can be the best player in the country also. And I had never put the two together. And so with that, man, I just said, I'm going to listen to this guy. I'm going to do everything he asked me to do. And, you know, I had a great junior year. And, you know, my senior year, I won the Heisman Trophy. So, you know, he says, hey, anybody could have came along and did that. I just don't believe that. You know, I think he has very special attributes about himself that enables him to be able to connect with guys, literally make guys want to run through walls for him. And I was very grateful and thankful for him, you know, being in my life at that particular time.
That's great. Tim, tell me about the NFTs that are being auctioned off. Man, it's a unique art form. What was that whole experience like for you? I'm still learning about all these NFTs. Bruh. So it's really cool.
That is the thing. NFT, FNT, what are we talking about here? It's what, you know, when this first came out a couple of months ago, man, I couldn't wrap my head around it for nothing. And then you saw what Patrick Mahomes and Gronkowski, it was like, what in the world is going on? But over the last couple of months to be able to see what's going on and really be, you know, in conversation about what's going on with my NFT has really sort of opened my eyes to this whole deal and to see, you know, the beginning of it, the middle part, and now the finished product. It's really just remarkable. And you know, if you're a fan of some athlete or some person or whatever, and they have, I just think this is a remarkable piece of memorabilia to have, without a doubt.
Well, everybody can check them out at timbrownnfts.com. I know that there's the one-on-one NFT offerings has three special in real life bonuses for the auction winner. There's a virtual meet and greet call that you'll do. There's a personalized piece of memorabilia. There's two tickets. Now, what can that fan experience be like?
Well, you know, I mean, if we're at the Hall of Fame, it's going to be great. No doubt about that. So, you know, this, I've gotten very good at Zoom. So we're going to do an incredible Zoom call. So I'm going to show him my whole house, all the memorabilia. We're going to do the whole deal. It's going to be great. You know, I just think, you know, for whoever ends up with this piece of art, it'll be an incredible time. And I think this will be a connection for a lifetime. I don't think it's just going to be, you know, we do this and we move on. You know, I think this is the person that I would be connected with for a while.
Well, Tim, it's been a really cool conversation with you, and I thank you so much for your time, and look forward to checking those out and seeing who ends up being the auction winner. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
That was Pro Football Hall of Famer Tim Brown. Thank you so much to Tim for joining us this week. Thank you to Doug Horton, Pastor Scott, Josh, and everyone on our team. And thank you for listening to Faith on the Field Show, presented by International Justice Mission. With Remy, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference, be a blessing.
Today, over 40 million people are being forced into trafficking and slavery. One in four are children. We cannot allow them to suffer in silence. We need you. We need everybody. Go to IJM.org/take action. Get information. Understand how you can be involved. Because of the work that you are committing to do, they will be free.